Live and festive in the Publix Holiday Headquarters studio at WSB.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Wes Moss. You can find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. If you'd like to find us throughout the week, there's a contact button in the upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. I know that the rest of the world is probably pretty nervous. And on Money Matters, we take calls, we take questions. We try to be the most objective financial advice show that you can find in the nation, and we will continue to do that as long as we possibly can. We're going to go back to the phones. Tom, are you still with us? Did you stay on the line?
Tom? Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, wow. Thanks for sticking on the line. Because this is an interesting question. You're a young guy. You're only 40, and you had a big exit for a company, and you think you're thinking maybe you retire. The question is, what do you do with the money? How does it produce income for the rest of your life? I guess exactly. My question is, are you looking forward to no longer working, or do you think in like a couple of months or maybe in a year you will go back to work for fun? Or I want to hear that side of the equation, not just the money side. We'll get to that in a minute. I want to talk about income investing a little bit, but what are you going to do, man? I think if you're a listener right now, you're driving around, you're thinking, man, that's pretty cool. Tom's able to stop working, which is what we're all trying to do. And by the way, this is like my theme, is why I'm so glad you stayed on the line. I wrote a book called You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, 5 Money Secrets of the Happiest Retirees. And it's for people that are in their 40s and 50s and 60s and even in their 70s. But Tom, tell me, what do you think you're going to be doing, man?
Yeah, so I've spent the last, 15 years behind a computer building an online business. And I want to get away from that. So when it comes to work, I can see myself, going to culinary school or being a park ranger or something like that, that involves being outside and getting out from behind a computer all day. I'm not averse to working. It's just that, should I do that or should I spend the time managing the money and trying to make that produce income? Is that the job? So I'm not averse to working, but I don't see it as something that I'd have to do. I have young kids, so I'd like to spend some time with them.
Okay, so you do have kids. How old are the kids?
I've got 2 kids. I've got one who's going to be 10 in a few days, and then a 6-year-old.
And so the one thing I always think about is that is getting them to be, call it 21, so really kind of through school. And that's the other basket, obviously, that you want to think about. I think no matter how much money you have, whether you have $500,000 or $1 million or you have $10 million, you still are worried about that very large amount of money if you're going to help them pay for school or pay for school completely. Because it almost doesn't matter how much money you have, it's still such a big line item. So I would say that is obviously something to consider, is that you've got, let's call it, in 10 years, you've got one that'll be in the heart of college age, and then you have one that's almost starting in a few years after that. You'll have a 20-year-old and a 16-year-old. So mm-hmm. I would put a certain amount of that money that is designated just for them. And that's obviously has a really long-term time horizon, 10 full years, let's call it, or 8 years before you start to use it. So it's a long time horizon, not an eternal time horizon. You, my friend, kind of have an eternal time horizon, right? Any once you go past 10 years, you're talking about multiple market cycles. So you are arguably investing for the next half century, right? Very mm-hmm. often people think, oh, now I'm in retirement, and now that my time horizon's at zero, now I'm here. So now I've got to be really, really conservative with my money, and I want to make sure I don't quote lose because I'm here. I always want to remind folks that even if you're 65, you might have a 30-year time horizon to make your money last. Just statistically, if you make it to 65 and you're relatively healthy, you're going to live to your mid-80s. So you got 20 years, which, again, a long period of time. So my point here is that the balance is your friend. I have a rule of thumb called the 15-50 stock rule, which basically says, hey, if you think you're going to have 15 more years on this planet and you're going to live, which almost every, if I asked a 70-year-old, do you think you're going to live 15 years? The answer is, I'm going to do everything I can. Yeah, I hope so. Then my point here is that even for somebody that age, as long as you have a little bit of tolerance for fluctuation, you still probably want about 50% in some sort of income producing equities or stocks that, by the way, will still get caught up in this market oscillation that we're in the middle of right now. These prices of even good companies, we just talked about Procter & Gamble, as another example of a company that's paid a dividend for a very, very long period of time, Johnson & Johnson. These are companies that have not only paid dividends for decades and decades, but they've raised their dividends, Tom. They've actually, Procter & Gamble, I think, is in year 61 in raising dividends, so like since 1957. Johnson & Johnson has raised the dividend. They paid one longer than that, but raised it every year for 55 years. So now you're starting to think about companies, and one of the ETFs, I talk about exchange-traded funds on Money Matters a lot, that is specifically designed to only own what are called the dividend aristocrats. These are companies that have paid consistently and increased what they pay out to you, as these are stocks, not bonds for a minute, for at least 20 consecutive years. So you start thinking about that. I mentioned that financial advisors very often will do a myriad of things, and they'll sell you this, and we've got this annuity, and this product, and this alternative product, when in reality, most of them would probably own really high-quality blue-chip companies that pay out dividends if they were to come into $5 million or $10 million. And I think that is a lesson for all of us listening, that that's really what stands the test of time. I remember I did a show a couple of years ago, and you think about the foreign investors that come into the United States, like the Prince Alawid, right? What does he do with, he doesn't have billions of dollars anymore because he was sequestered in a Ritz-Carlton, I think, and a lot of his money was taken. But what if you were an international oil mogul, and you're worried about your own government, let's say you're in Russia or you're in Saudi Arabia or in South America, you're worried about your own government saying, hey, this is a billionaire. We're gonna take half off the top, right? Which, by the way, happens all the time. This is one of the only countries in the world where you don't worry about that, right? Some people do, but I'm not worried about that here in the United States of America. What do billionaires do from outside of the United States? They come to the United States, and they do two things with that money. They buy high-end real estate, and they buy blue-chip companies in America. If you looked at a list of what a foreign mogul will come to buy, they're going to buy the Dow Jones. They're going to own Apple. They're going to own Home Depot. They're going to own 3M. They're going to own Procter & Gamble. They're going to own Johnson & Johnson, because they know that over time, that's where you can really – not only just store your wealth, and when you're a billionaire, by the way, you're just trying to keep the money, right? But I think that says a lot as an investor here. I want to keep the money, but I also want it to pay me residually consistently over time. And so I think that a big part of what I would be doing if I were you, and I have a feeling, by the way, Tom, you're probably going to go back to work here, which is cool that I love that you might be a park ranger. I think that'd be so cool. Right. I love that you're going back to culinary school. You may even want to have a restaurant, which you and I both know is probably the worst investment you can make.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody that wins the lottery, they want to buy a boat, a house, and a restaurant. And typically that's the quickest way to get rid of your money. And but I think it's a phenomenal position for you to be in. And if you've got to understand that you've got forever, basically, you've got 50 years. So you can be a stock investor. You could be, if you're 40, typically you want to have 100% of your investments in stocks anyway, as long as you've got a little bit of risk tolerance, knowing that over time, even though we go through times like this, and this is a really important piece of the equation, we go through terrible markets like we've just been through, is to remember the difference between temporary losses and permanent losses. And temporary losses are really good companies that are just depressed in price for a period of time that the business is still going, the business is still strong. As long as soon as the market kind of wakes back up and says, okay, well, we're not falling off a cliff. Those are the companies that come back really well and really healthy. So your temporary downdraft doesn't last forever. It doesn't turn into permanent losses. And that's why you've got to be really careful about having a diversified portfolio, because you could have said, oh, I'm going to own blue chip General Electric, and that's a disaster company down 80%. That's really kind of a permanent loss. You can't have the 80% losses. You can have 20 and 30% and they're going to correct themselves. So that's why you own obviously more than one stock. You own a handful. You own several ETFs that have 50 to 100 companies within, and some individual companies, so you know the exact dividend. And I'm a big believer in owning individual companies as well as ETFs or exchange traded funds that have multiple companies as well. And then for your really safe money, Tom, so that you can always, let's say, point to something that isn't going down in mayhem. And again, this is, I think, more from a psychological perspective, but if you own bonds or treasury bonds or municipal bonds that are super high quality in credit, in a market, let's call it meltdown, markets in turmoil, down 20%, what happens to the bond portfolio that you own? Probably goes up a little bit. And that's why if you think about those multiple sides of all the different things we can invest in, yes, we want stocks for long-term growth and dividends over time, but they're still going to get caught up in these market waves. That's why for most folks, particularly when you get into retirement and you're there, right? So you arguably are going to stop working for now, at least. You got to preserve the money that you have. That's why we want a portion of it in safe assets that really helps us get through these market corrections. So you want to say, hey, I've got 20% of my money or a quarter of all my assets in something that I know will really never go away. So call that relatively short-term treasuries. And by the way, today, because where interest rates are, you're going to get 2.5% to 3% even in really high quality bonds. And that is at least a buffer that you can point to during these stock sell-offs and say, you know what, I have no worry about that money at all. So it's the combination, Tom, of all those things. It sounds like you've got some really great fun plans. I love that you're 40 and you don't have to work anymore, and you're going to be hopefully a famous chef, and you get to spend a lot of time with the kids. You'll probably go back to some sort of work because it's going to be fun. You don't have to, which makes work even more fun. And then you're going to be able to live off the money in a very residual way, and you'll be able to start to adapt your budget to all the income that you're receiving from all these areas. Listen, man, thank you for your call. I guess happy new year as we come up in the new year. And I wish you the very, very best.
Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We've been taking phone calls and questions because we're just in the middle of what I know is a kind of a nerve-wracking period of time as an investor. It's just not easy. We know we need time, and we very often think of our time horizon as quick, and it's, oh, well, I don't have a long horizon, but we all do. We have a really long period of time, and if we, and in America, you think, well, it takes time to get ahead, and wages haven't grown very much in this country. And I think that if we were maybe better investors, it could help maybe offset a little bit of that lack of wage growth. But the media makes it really tough to be an investor. How long does it take to get to $1 million? 99% of Americans never will even think they can get there, when the reality is it takes $500 a month and time. It takes $500 a month and some time. If you have a 6% rate of return, you do it in 40 years. If you started when you were 20, which nobody does, by the time you're 60, you have $1 million, $500 a month. That's what it does. If you're 30, you get there by the time you're 70, again, $500 a month. It takes a 6% rate of return. Now, it's easy to say that and go through these numbers, but I also want to just remind all of us that we don't even necessarily need to get to a million. But it takes time and a little bit of money. Well, 500 is not a little bit, but it's an amount that if you're really focused on it, you could do it. You know you could cut out $500 to save for you, for yourself, as you think about 2019. So I want next year to be about you and your family, and how can you have a better year in 2019 than you did in 18? What are the things that you need to do as a family to focus more on you and the family and core pursuits that you need to start developing today, not when you're 67, you're saying, I'm about to retire. Now I got to get all these fun things to do. It's too late. Core pursuits is the number one trait of a happy retiree. You need at least 3.5 or 4 of them. You got to start developing them today. You just like you need to start saving today if you're in your 30s and 40s. You've got to start developing yourself and the things that you want to do. This comes from research in a book called You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, The 5 Money Secrets of the Happiest Retirees. That's really what matters. We need both sides of the equation, the emotional side, we're taking care of ourselves, and the financial side so that we can pay for the things we want to do. And that all you can find, of course, at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. You find me and the Money Matters team and the book and the podcast, you name it. Stay tuned.
Thanks to USB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. If you'd like to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so. Go to wesmoss.com. That's WESMOSS.com. Almost all the topics we discuss on the show are written about and are typically on the homepage at wesmoss.com. If you don't find them there, they're in the money tab at the top of the homepage, or there's a search function and just search one of the keywords that we've talked about throughout the show, and you'll find an article. Otherwise, you can always email us through the site. Thank you for tuning in. We went to the phones earlier, and we'll do the same thing here, because if you are new to what we talk about or what I talk about, if you think of Clark Howard as the save more, spend less, avoid getting ripped off guy, and you've got Dave Ramsey's the get out of debt guy, and Susie Orman is the you can't buy anything lady that is way too tan. I guess I'm the retire sooner guy. I wrote a book called You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think. That's the world that I live in, is trying to help people to retire sooner than they might have thought. Even if it's a year earlier, I'm doing my job. God bless you if you're 55. Or the caller we had earlier who's 40 in retiring. Wonderful. We on Sunday mornings, 9 to 11, where we typically are, objective show, objective call and advice for do-it-yourself investors and people who care about their money, they want their money to grow, or they're just thinking about how do I generate more income, and they're interested about the economy. I love the economy, studying it. It's fun to me. I studied at the University of North Carolina and was an economics major, so it's always been kind of in my natural wheelhouse. What's interesting about the investment business is that Wall Street always is making the economy seem as though it's about to fall off a cliff, when very often it's not. And the next thing we talk about, and I'll give you an example in just a minute, the next thing we talk about on Money Matters all the time, happy retirees. It's a huge underlying theme in my book, You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think. 18, it's really the 5 traits of the happiest retirees. I believe in studying successful people or populations and then emulating what they do. Just like Thomas Stanley's The Millionaire Next Door, what did millionaires do to get there? I talk about what do happy retirees do to get there and retire early. And that's what the book is. You can retire sooner than you think. Here's an example, though, as you listen to talk radio and financial shows galore, they're of course, you've got to be interesting. We've got to get clicks. We've got to get listeners. So it's easier to be salacious, and it's easier to talk about bad news because it's concrete. Hey, I know what the bad news is. It's hard to say be optimistic because you're still painting a picture into the future, and that's harder to do because you have to have foresight. You've got to be looking out into something effectively that is still not happened yet. And that's why it's always easier to be negative, and it's way easier to scare folks when it comes to anything money related. It's very easy to do that. I could sit here and in the next 5 minutes get so scary that you've sold everything you have and you've literally just put it in a safe box underneath a mattress in a safe underneath your home in the foundation. That's how easy it is to scare the world. But that's not what we do, because we're trying to get objective and be objective about what's really happening in the world. An example, you pull up housing statistics and you immediately find headlines that go back to the summer that said U.S. home building plunges to a 9-month low. U.S. housing starts tumble over 12%. The lowest level since, it's always since last week. But all you hear is, oh, the end is near. Oh, housing's going south. What's happening? If you really look at the numbers and look at home building, well, what home building has done, and again, it's a huge part of the economy. If you look at 2006, it cratered in the financial crisis. We were building 2.2 million new homes in America on an annualized basis. That number cratered because we were overlending to folks who shouldn't have been lent to. And people were overborrowing money they shouldn't have borrowed. And we effectively had a major housing bubble that for a variety of reasons, and then home building virtually ground to a virtual halt. We went from 2.2 million homes being built on an annual basis all the way down to 500,000 or lower than 500,000. It was a 78% drop. Then we rebuilt that number pretty steadily over the years. From 2009 until 2015, we climbed back to the million new homes being built pace in 2015. Then where we are today, we've slowly increased to about 1.25 million new home pace. But you go back a couple months, it sounded like the home building was going to all of a sudden stop when of course it didn't. We've had this very positive trend in housing over the last several years. And you look that up and you're going to hear that it may not look all that good when in fact it is. One of the headlines today, we are at a 49-year low for unemployment claims, meaning that, and that's good. We want unemployment claims to be low. We're at almost a 50-year low with that. If you look at the numbers that have just recently come out about the holiday shopping season, MasterCard, UPS, Amazon, three pretty good measures of what's happening in the world. Payment processor of the world, shipper of the world, UPS, and then Amazon, all had the best year they've had in, call it 6 years. Holiday sales up 5.1%, $850 billion in spending. Online sales grew 19.1% since 2017. Whoa, that's a lot. Amazon's selling a ton of LOL, surprise, glam, glitter dolls. That's what they're selling. Bose wireless headphones. And then Carhartt's clothing. Just America. And it's flying off the shelves, yet the stock market is cratering. All those same stocks I mentioned, even though their businesses are going well over the last couple of months, Amazon stock down 25% plus, MasterCard down over 20%, UPS down over 20%. So even though their business is going well, their stocks have done terribly because they're caught up with the rest of the market. Which brings me to the point of temporary versus permanent. A really good stock can still get hit on a temporary basis. When I say temporary, I mean a month, 5 months, even a year because of a bad market. But don't think that doesn't last forever. And that's what we have to understand as investors. The bad news doesn't stay forever, even though the media would love to make you think that we are headed into the abyss at any given time. So that is kind of our eternal battle. What we're trying to fight against is that you don't to make sure that we don't just get caught in this negative cycle every time we have a little bit of a stock market correction. Now, arguably, this is a little more than a little bit. We had the worst December we have had since 1931, the worst Christmas Eve we had ever. And now you're, as an investor, wondering, hey, where do we go from here? Well, a couple of things to remember, that the stock market corrections are actually really normal. And even though you don't like them, they're very, very normal part of how markets work over time. On average, we get these 10% corrections or more every 1 to 2 years. Every 1 to 2 years, we get one of these at least 10% corrections on average. Now, we get bear markets or 20% corrections every, call it 4 to 5 years. Well, guess what? We've gone almost a full decade without a bear market, and we finally got one. I think it's actually a good thing to almost let a little bit of the steam out of this market so that we can reset and potentially move higher next year. Now, why would we move higher next year? Why would we be optimistic about the future? This seems like everything's going poorly. Well, my mother called me this week, and my brother, and most of my family, and said, what is going on with the stock market? Honey, what's going on with the stock market? I'm worried. The world seems like it's a complete mess. So here's what I would say to that. And you're probably saying the same thing. God, the world kind of seems like a mess. Well, first, let's start with the basics. Where's the economy? It's in wonderful shape. Chances of recession? The answer there is always 100%, because we always go into recession at some point. We don't stay in expansion mode forever. We've got to pause to refresh. Pause to refresh. So the answer, chance of recession, 100% over time. But this coming year, very slim. Leading indicators, which is a really important mix of 10 forward-looking economic measures. So think of housing permits, home building, consumer expectations, consumer confidence, manufacturing orders, durable or capital goods orders, all future-looking economic indicators. That is at a very robust level right now. Wages are growing at over 3%. The unemployment rate's at 3.7%, near 50-year low. Inflation is in check. Now, that can't last all forever, but that's strong. Strong to quite strong. And let's remember, the U.S. economy is the envy. You think it's bad here? Try going somewhere else. The U.S. economy is still the envy of the free world. It's the envy of the entire world. Oil prices are low, by the way, which we just had the best shopping holiday season we've had in over 5 years, over six years. Corporate profits up last year, up 20%. I mean, that's what drives the market, is do companies make money or not? And if they make more money this year than they did next year, or next year than they did this year, that's really what drives markets higher. That growth is going to slow down in 2019, but it doesn't mean it's going in reverse, just slower growth. It's important to remember that the tax cut that got passed this past year, it wasn't just a one-time event. It made our corporate structure here in America, it made our companies more competitive than they've ever been to be domiciled here in the United States than we've been in a very, very long time. So that wasn't, it's the corporate tax cuts get a lot of flack for being like just a one-time sugar high. These are real changes that can have positive benefits for as long as they're in place. Lower corporate tax rate. Hey, I want to do business here in the United States. And then recessions usually start when the Fed goes absolutely crazy and starts to raise interest rates dramatically. They haven't done that. Yes, interest rates are higher, but here's another economic piece of history. The real rate, which is really what you're paying, it's the Federal Reserve's rate, which is 2.5% today, minus inflation, which is about 2.25%. The real rate, which is the Fed's rate minus inflation, is only about 0.25% today. Prior to the start of the last 8 recessions, going back to 1960, the real Fed funds rate was no less than 2%. So you have to have really high real rates, usually, at least since 1960, to go into recession. We're nowhere near that. Again, another piece of real good news.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Let's go to Jackie. He joins us in Marietta. Jackie, good morning. What's going on? How can I help?
Hi, Wes. How are you?
Good, Jackie.
Been listening to you for a long time. Just love your show every Sunday morning.
Thank you. Now, are you in the car and just happen to tune in, or are you at the house just hanging out in the holidays?
No, I'm at the house listening to you this morning, and wonderful. I listen to you every Sunday morning too.
Well, thank you. Well, what's going on?
I love your show.
Thank you.
I am in retirement. I am 67. I have worked all my life to save for a comfortable retirement. And what I've done is I've chased dividends too much, so I've invested in a lot of oil and pipeline companies, gas companies, and they have plummeted, and I have lost a fortune. And I don't know if it's time to just say, get out of it, take my losses, while the market is down and reallocate that money to things that are more stable and will eventually go up again.
You know, here's, I think, a super important point that Jackie brings up here is that income investing is, in my opinion, it's kind of my preferred financial philosophy. There's a million ways to do this. Growth at a reasonable price, macro, micro, small cap, sector rotation. There's a million ways to invest, right? Our philosophy for all these years on Money Matters continues to be income investing. I want you to go for more Goldilocks-oriented dividend companies, meaning that not too hot, not too cold. You really want to be aiming for the 3% to 4.5% range. Those are the companies that have a sustainable level of dividends, typically. If you're getting to the 8, 9, 10% range, that might look good for a minute. And then it typically ends really badly. So let's stay in that, in the not too hot, not too cold Goldilocks lane. This is exactly what we talk about on Money Matters. So tune in Sunday mornings, 9 until 11, live call in. Just remember that in the world we live in, it's really easy to make kind of the bear case. Bad news is easy to come up with. It's always easy to make the bear or the bad, what we call the bear case, or paint the picture that the world's in bad shape and it's getting worse. The reality here is that the world gets better. It keeps getting better. So keep the faith, my friends. You can find me and our team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Have a wonderful rest of your day and Happy New Year.